summit, where Trump started echoing the reality when he was talking about Ukraine, loss of Ukrainian forces, the movement of the front, the direction of movement of the front lines, etc., etc. And recently he has stopped talking anything about it. So what kind of lies are being told to him?
Mostly Lindsey Graham and his crew who are telling him it doesn't matter. What you're doing is you're bleeding Russia, and you want to bleed them to the last drop of blood. And if it costs Zelensky his life, if it costs Ukraine another 100 kilometers of terrain, so be it. You want to bleed Putin to the maximum. And Graham's even telling him that if he does that, in the middle of that, Putin will fall. That's what he's telling him, that Putin is hard pressed. Even when someone comes over that knows what he's talking about and tells the president, as one individual did, I'm told, that Putin is hard-pressed, all right, but he's hard-pressed by the right. They want him to finish this war. If necessary, destroy Ukraine. Not hard-pressed by peaceniks or people who want it to stop. But Trump is not getting the right view. And Graham has, I don't know what kind of hold Graham has on Trump, because really the two men despise one another. It works both ways. They despise one another. But Graham has some kind of hold on him. And it might not just be Graham as Graham. It might be the entourage that Graham leads in the Senate and elsewhere. But they do not want to give Putin a moment's rest. They fear if we give him a moment's rest, he will revive. And they know he's dying. And that's what they're telling Trump.
I was following the U.S. escalation on India when those additional sanctions were imposed. And I saw that Lindsey Graham had a tremendous leverage. I mean, I didn't have any direct evidence, but the kind of things Lindsey Graham was saying about restrictions on H-1B, about additional sanctions on India because of buying Russian crude oil for refinery, et cetera, all of them manifested, or even ultimately Peter Navarro and others started towing the same line and started spilling them in Fox News. And that became the U.S. policy. I mean, long before it was even spoken within the officials in the Trump administration, it was Lindsey Graham and his ilk who was making noises about those kind of policies. So it's not surprising when you were saying that Lindsey Graham must be having some kind of leverage over Trump, despite the two guys hating each other.
I'm being told, and when I was first told this, I just tossed it aside, but now I'm having difficulty doing that, that it's somehow wrapped up with the Epstein affair, that so many people have so many holds on other people because of the Epstein affairs. And so a lot of what we're looking at is kind of opaque. You wonder why this happened. You wonder why that happened. And it goes back to years and years of a lot of participation with Epstein in these people's lives. And it's not just the Lolita Express. It's not just, you know, pedophiles and so forth. That's some of it. But a lot of it is the money he wielded and the influence through that money he wielded and the nefarious things that people did with that money. For example, I'm told that Ehud Barak was as participatory in the island process as was Prince Andrew. And we've seen what happened to Prince Andrew. And that doesn't happen very often unless there's some fire there. You know, a lot of smoke, a lot of royal smoke, but there was some fire there. I'm told Barak was as participatory as Prince Andrew was. And there are emails to corroborate that. I'm told Bill Clinton was almost the same. And I go back to Oslo and that moment of sudden stoppage, and Arafat caught in the headlights like a deer and wondering what had happened to him. And everything ended, stopped. And I'm being told by people who know what they're talking about normally that there was a little blackmail going on there with both Clinton and Barack. So if those kinds of things have any shred of truth to them, then a lot of what the question you asked about Graham and where's this power coming from has an origin, I think. There are a lot of people blackmailing a lot of people. And Lindsey Graham's not necessarily out of that either, because Lindsey is known to have some problems himself. I won't go into them, but he has some problems. When he says he doesn't have time for sex, he's too busy, there are reasons for that.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners. You are tuned into Iran Radio, broadcasting from Tehran, and I'm your host from the next hour. Here are some interesting facts about the Holy Quran. Surah Yasin is considered the heart of the Quran for its tremendous benefits for the believer. The best drink according to Quran is milk. In the Quran, Allah also describes the rivers of milk in heaven. The best food, according to Quran, is honey, which cures several problems and is the sweetest gift to humans from Allah. Normally, the Quran declares Friday as the most blessed day of the week. And the month of Ramadan is the best month of the year. And the night of Qadr has been described as a night better than 1,000 months. Its significance is described in chapter Al-Qadr. And now we'll listen to the continuation of Iran Radio. We start off with The Spotlight, a daily program which covers the most important events happening in the world today. After that, we have Back to Reality. Guests on this program have experienced living in a non-Muslim country. The main theme of the program is Muslims living in non-Islamic country. And to round up this hour's programs, we have Iran today. The program presents the latest advances in science and technology in the Islamic Republic of Iran. It also highlights the latest business and economic developments in Iran. Stay with us for the next hour.
Bring us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome, everyone. The International Federation for Human Rights, one of the oldest human rights organizations in the world, says from Paris to Washington, Berlin to London, support for Palestinian rights has been censored, criminalized, or violently repressed under the pretext of combating anti-Semitism and protecting national security. In a recent report, the FIDH focused on violations of the rights to freedom of assembly, association, and expression in the content of the repression of Palestinian solidarity movement in France, Germany, the UK, and the US. Now, today, there is a court session underway, in the United Kingdom as leaders of Palestine Action fight to have their group delisted as a terrorist organization, while in Germany, a similar group, Palestine Congress, is also seeking answers from a Berlin court why police, they feel, unlawfully shut down their April conference. This disturbing Western trend of authorities targeting Palestinian activism to protect apartheid, occupation, and genocide is a topic of our Spotlight program. And now for our guests. Joining us is Charlotte Cates, International Coordinator at Sami Doun Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network, joining us from Beirut, Lebanon. And Mr. Mohsen Naqvi, human rights activist and organizer, joining us from Texas, out of the States. Hello to our esteemed colleagues and guests, Charlotte Cates and Mohsen Naqvi. Welcome to the program. I guess we'll start with Charlotte in Beirut. Charlotte, good to talk to you again, have you join us. Your initial take on this campaign by Israel's enablers and suppliers in the West to try to censor and put an end to any kind of criticism of Tel Aviv's long list of war crimes and crimes against humanity when it comes to Palestinians.
Well, when we look at the ongoing genocide, which is still taking place in Gaza, but is also and has been being carried out against the Palestinian people as a whole for the past 78 years, what we see is that the imperialist powers, Britain, the United States, France, Germany, Canada, Italy, are partners in crime. And in fact, they view the maintenance and creation of the Zionist entity as a way of achieving their goals to dominate and control and oppress the entire region. And what we've seen after Al-Aqsa flood after the uprising of the Palestinian people, as millions of people poured into the streets in support of Palestine and an absolute outrage and horror against the Zionist genocide, which revealed to the world the reality of Zionism and revealed to the reality, revealed to the world the reality of what this billions of dollars in weaponry and funding and support going to the Zionist entity actually mean, that they do in fact mean dead children and murdered families and destroyed hospitals and universities and schools, it became absolutely unacceptable to the imperialist powers that people domestically were speaking out, rising up, and organizing. And so you see things taking place like mass criminalization of organizing for Palestine, police attacks, the designation of Sami Doun as a terrorist entity by Canada, the designation of Palestine Action as a proscribed organization by Britain. Right now, there are six activists on hunger strike inside British jails because they've been held for a year. They're being subjected to censorship, and the British government is continuing its complicity in genocide. So they are protecting their interests because they view the maintenance of this genocidal regime as a goal for preserving their hegemony.
Thank you for your opening take there, Charlotte. Mohsen Naqvi, pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you for your patience. Now, Mohsen, your opening thoughts as well. This organization, the International Federation for Human Rights, they say the British government has repeatedly minimized and legitimized Israel's atrocities in Gaza, carried out a sustained attack on the right to protest in solidarity with Gaza and against Israel's genocidal violence has been met with high levels of police surveillance and police violence. And case in point, as Charlie was just referring to, Palestine Action supporters, thousands arrested, hundreds charged, many still detained, some of them on hunger strike. Your initial take, please.
Well, yeah, the British government has made its priorities very, very clear. Shielding Israel from accountability matters more than protecting its own population's basic democratic rights. We've seen a sustained attack on the right to protest, especially in the West. And mass marches against the slaughter in Gaza have faced intense surveillance, aggressive policies, and now the criminalization of direct action groups like Palestine Action, even to the point of prescribing them as terrorist organizations. That move, it has opened the door to thousands of arrests and hundreds of charges against supporters all over the world, from people taking action against arms factories, to those simply holding signs or even wearing symbols of solidarity for Palestine Action. And when a state, when a country, when an empire responds to peaceful or civil disobedience protests with terrorism laws, historically it is admitting something it cannot morally defend its position. So it leans on repression, not persuasion. And that's exactly what we're seeing here in the UK. It is a government more interested in protecting Israeli arms deals than protecting its own people's right to oppose a genocide.
And that's a very good point. And Charlotte, that's going to bring me to my next question. I mean, these charges and this harassment of from the college campus protests, harassment of students, many of them that weren't American citizens, arrested and deported because of pro-Palestine activities, the demonstrations and demonstrators in the UK, in Germany, all the way to Australia, France, arrested and charged. Many people have their livelihoods uprooted as a result of the pro-Palestine activism. Now, these are, taking place in direct contravention of the constitutional liberties and guarantees these people are supposed to enjoy in these Western societies. They're supposed to have the platform and the freedom to speak out against Israel and its atrocities against Palestinians.
Well, let's just say this. Over the past 2 years, any kind of illusion about what Western states mean when they speak about human rights and democracy, really has been exposed to its own citizens and to the world as well. It's very clear that there is no commitment to human rights or democracy. And of course, in reality, this is nothing new. These are the same governments, the same states that have engaged in the most horrific forms of violence against the victims of their colonialist and imperialist policies abroad, have engaged in horrific violence against workers demanding their rights, against people organizing against racism, against people, you know, fighting for the most basic forms of justice. And this has been expanded, you know, really just intensified at this very broad level, because when there's a conflict between the future of imperialism and Zionism and civil liberties and human rights, well, let's face it, the billionaires and the ruling class are more than happy to chop off the head of human rights, democracy, and civil liberties in order to serve what they view as their interests in the region, which are definitely not in the interests of the masses of people. There is no interest that the average person in the United States has in being involved in genocide in Palestine. There is no interest that a worker in Germany or Italy or Britain has in funding and providing and sending weaponry and sending spy flights to help eliminate Palestinians in Gaza or engage in assassinations and violations in Lebanon or in Yemen. There's no interest that the people have in this, and people have been coming out in unprecedented numbers to express this. And frankly, in combination with the Palestinian resistance and all of the forces of resistance in the region, the imperialist powers saw this as and continue to see this as an existential threat to the maintenance of the Zionist project inside Palestine, because the reality is the Zionist project is artificially implanted, and it relies on the ongoing, unending series of planes of support and military aid that in order to maintain that colonial entity in the region in the first place.
And mostly, thank you, Charlotte. Charlotte answered this earlier. I'd like to get your take on it. Why do you think Israel receives this level of protection from Western governments? Governments willing to compromise their own laws and liberties, as you alluded to earlier, attack their own people to protect a regime built on hate, discrimination, apartheid, land theft, ethnic cleansing, occupation, and genocide.
Well, there are a few layers to this. First, Israel is not just another state in Western strategic thinking. It is seen as a key outpost of Western power in the Middle East. It's a heavily armed client state that helps police the region, tests weapons, and also it safeguards the Western economic and geopolitical interests. That's why you see such deep military intelligence and technological cooperation, from arms export to joint surveillance program between the West, where the American Empire heads the West, with the Zionist regime in West Asia. Secondly, there's a powerful network of lobby groups, think tanks, and political donors that have spent years upon years equating any meaningful criticism of Israel with anti-Semitism. I mean, you have giant organizations, lobby groups like AIPAC here in the U.S., and that kind of political pressure makes any government willing to bend, if not outright gay. But their own laws and principles avoid being labeled anti-Semitic, even when Palestinians, Jewish anti-Zionists, and human rights experts are clearly saying that opposing apartheid and opposing a genocide is not a hatred for Jews. Third, there's a deep continuity with the war on terror. Islamophobia, Arab racism, and the old colonial logic of civilized versus the uncivilized, and how the British called it just war. They're all being repackaged. Palestinians are cast as a security threat. Israelis as us in that framework, so to speak. And protecting Israel is almost at the cost of your own citizen looks to them like defending civilization, and hence you see that repression on American citizens here in the U.S. as well. So when you see a regime built on hate, discrimination, land, ethnic cleansing, and genocide, that's exactly what international law experts and human rights bodies are documenting. What's remarkable is not that Israel is being called out, it's that Western governments are willing to erode their own democracies to stop that truth from getting any kind of power.
is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
And Charlotte, forget the last 70, 80 years, just the last 2 years alone, we've seen these Western countries protecting Israel to the point where they're violating the rights of, and you very well know it's been documented, academics, including professors and students, activists, advocacy groups, I have a small list here, journalists, elected officials, actors, producers, musicians, athletes. Now, Charlotte, you very well know, and you've seen it time and again, that these are people that we celebrate in society, people that use their forms to help bring others together, you know, and for Israel, they are being thrown under the bus by their governments instead. It's not, I don't know, you could say it's quite remarkable, but really it's just quite pathetic, isn't it?
Well, it's absolutely the case, because the fact is that if you are a person with a conscience today, there is absolutely no way that you can justify aligning yourself with this genocidal, criminal, apartheid, illegitimate entity that has been implanted in Palestine. There's simply no more justification. People cannot just kind of brush it off and say, oh yeah, you know, Israel has a right to exist. That the reality, which is that the Zionist entity is a completely fraudulent, illegitimate entity that is based on colonialism, dispossession, land theft, mass murder and destruction, that everything about the Zionist entity is illegitimate. And as your other guest said so well, there is this deep integration between the security and intelligence services of the Western imperialist powers and the Zionist project. The Zionist project is the testing ground for what we're actually seeing is the same kinds of policies that are being implemented. But one thing it does show is that despite the repression, more and more people are speaking out. People are willing to put their jobs, their careers, their futures on the line. There are, for example, hundreds of tech workers in advanced positions in major corporations like Microsoft and Google and Amazon who have put their jobs on the line or have resigned because they refuse to be part of massive corporations that are continually involved in developing and making even sharper the use of AI and technology to surveil and control and repress and kill Palestinians. And these are people who have, you know, studied hard and worked for years to achieve like a pinnacle of success in their careers. And they're willing to put that all on the line because they don't want to be a part of and be complicit in genocide. And, you know, the role of the Western countries is so strong that that is the choice. It's complicity or action. And more people are choosing action, and that says a lot.
And Charlotte, I'm going to stay with you for one more question before I go back to Mohsen. Mohsen mentioned how this is a Western outpost, Israel is in the Zionist project. So as long as that's the case, does that mean that the Zionist entity in Tel Aviv can do whatever it wants with impunity in Palestine, in Lebanon, in Syria, and elsewhere in the region, and anyone who in these Western countries speaks out against the atrocities committed therein basically gets backhanded by their authorities for simply getting in the way?
I mean, that's what the United States and Britain and France and Germany want to achieve. That is the outcome that they want to achieve. They want to impose that impunity. That's why we see absolutely ridiculous things like this UN Security Resolution 2803 coming out of the UN Security Council, even though it is an absolute slap in the face to any concept of international law and to the fundamental principles of the UN Charter, because they want to impose impunity for the Zionist entity. But the fact is that despite the repression, despite the fact that these countries are using their police powers to arrest people, to deport people, to imprison people, to declare our organizations terrorist entities for organizing and speaking out for Palestine, they're not able to change people's minds. People are still willing to go out and disrupt an arms factory. People are still willing to go out and say there has to be an end to this genocide. There has to be an end to this starvation. There has to be an end to these ongoing crimes. So they're not able to achieve their goals. Now, of course, they're also not able to achieve their goals in dismantling, disarming, and destroying the resistance of the people in the region. So it is our responsibility internationally to make it so that they can't achieve the implementation of what they want to see. That despite the repression, we have to organize, to fight back, to stay in the streets, to make it clear that we will not allow these crimes to pass.
Thank you. And Mohsen, get a load of this. Since 2014, U.S. federal and state lawmakers have proposed nearly 300 pieces of legislation aimed at repressing expressions of solidarity with Palestine, with over a quarter of the bills passing into law in 38 states and the federal government. Over 80 bills were proposed in 2023 alone, with some as extreme as a federal bill proposing to expel all Palestinians from the U.S. Mohsen, what part of this sounds legally valid, non-discriminatory, fair, just, or warranted, or has any congruency with the trajectory of the evolution of other laws in our societies these days?
Well, if you step back and look at that number, almost 300 bills since 2014, 300 bills since 2014 have been aimed at restricting expressions of solidarity with Palestine, with over a quarter that have been enacted as law. And it's obvious that this is not about mutually fighting hate. It is about targeting a group's political viewpoint or the nation's political viewpoint. And most of these laws revolve around punishing support for boycotts of Israel, the so-called anti-BDS laws. They condition public contracts, employment, or benefits on a person's willingness to pledge that they will not boycott Israel, especially here in Texas, by the way, where Governor Abbott has been promoting bills where the voice of the left is being restricted heavily because the yardstick of political dissent has now been criminalized here. Now, federal courts in the U.S., they've already struck down some of these as unconstitutional, compelled speech and viewpoint discrimination. Whether you get the more extreme proposal like bills, like you mentioned, seeking to expel all Palestinians from the U.S. or to brand virtually any Palestinian organization as a terrorist, you're not just in unconstitutional territory, you're in openly racist and collective punishment territory. And the world is seeing that. So that violates basic equal protection principles, international human rights laws, and any notion of fairness or due process. So to answer your question directly, none of this is legally valid in spirit. It's clearly discriminatory, it's punitive, and it's transparently designed to make Palestinians and their supporters so afraid of consequences that they simply stop speaking. So that's not law, that's repression dressed up in legal language. And let's not forget that this is not new for the U.S. empire. The U.S. empire has consistently used legal verbiage, has used the formation of law to target from the Black Liberation Army, from the Black Panther Party, from the La Raza Unida Party. These are strategies and tactics that the empire has been using ever since its formation. So this is what you would expect from a falling empire. It's desperate, and these are acts of desperation. The world is seeing, but clearly still remains silent.
And very well articulated. Thank you there, Mohsen. And another article, Charlotte, I want to put to you, I came across on the crackdown in the UK. It says, quote, "This clampdown has assumed a variety of forms, including narrative delegitimation, evident through statements made by politicians, amplified by complicit UK media, referring to Palestine solidarity gatherings in derogatory terms, and by stigmatizing solidarity protests as hate marches. Accusations and allegations of anti-Semitism help foster a sense of moral panic around this form of solidarity work. Now, Charlotte, this is not systemic or systematic censorship at its finest. What is it?
Well, that's absolutely what they're aiming to achieve. I mean, earlier in the program, we're talking about Britain here, but there's the same policy that's being used in Germany, in France, in Britain, in the United States as well. It's the same exact policy that's being pursued. There was a video of basically Berlin police tearing down the posters of Palestinian women political prisoners from a truck that was leading a demonstration against violence against women, highlighting the ongoing Zionist imperialist atrocities committed against Palestinian women in Gaza and throughout occupied Palestine just yesterday in Berlin. And the Berlin police were out there holding the demonstration up for an hour, climbing on the truck to tear down every image of an imprisoned Palestinian woman, struggling to take down that last picture of Tasnim al-Hams, the Palestinian nurse who's being imprisoned from Gaza after being abducted just weeks before the ceasefire agreement, in order to pressure her father, who's also a health worker, to seek to provide information and to undermine the Palestinian health system even further in Gaza. You know, that the images even of imprisoned Palestinians may not be seen by the public. In Britain, hundreds of people have been arrested for doing nothing more than carrying a sign that says, I support Palestine action, I oppose genocide. The attempt is to impose absolute terror and fear in the population so that people will be too afraid and will engage in self-censorship in order to not speak out, to not be arrested, to not be subjected to detention and deportation orders and political bans. And it's actually quite striking how much these measures have failed so far in actually suppressing the movement, not just against the current escalated genocide, but for the liberation of Palestine from the river to the sea. That there's a much larger percentage of the population, particularly in the heart of the imperial core, particularly in the Western countries, that today recognize the Zionist entity for what it is and stand firmly with the Palestinian people and with their resistance. And no matter how many times they try to arrest people for saying Palestinians have the right to resist, they're not able to erase the fundamental fact that Palestinians do have the right to resist and to free their land.
Thank you both. Time's gotten the better. It was a pleasure having you both on. It was an awesome program. Thank you. Charlotte Cates out of Beirut, Lebanon there, and Mr. Mohsen Naqvi joining us out of the U.S. state of Texas. Stay safe to both of you. And this brings us to the conclusion of this segment of your Spotlight program. Thank you for tuning in, and bye-bye for now.
Bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure.
Hello.
IRIB English Radio.
This is Back to Reality.
Back to Reality.
Here's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Roundtable from Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of your very favorite Back to Reality. Well, this is Asma once more. I have the honor to be your host in this program. And I have two very dear guests, Brother Liaqat and Sister Zainab. And I'm sure that your company is going to be so enjoyable and we're going to have a lot of insights to be sharing with each other. So, just like always, we have this ritual of the guests presenting themselves for the audience who have just joined us. Please give us a very brief introduction about yourself, and let's start with Sister Zainab, ladies first.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I'm Turfadlan Zainab Askari. I actually hail from India, but I have been living in Iran for some 10 years now. I studied science, then linguistics, and then Hausa, so I'm a multidisciplinary student.
Which makes you perfect for this program. And then you, Brother Liaqat?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I'm Muhammad Liaqat Abbas from India. I've done my bachelor's in Islamic history, and currently I'm about to finish my master's in psychology.
Very good. Thank you very much, both of you, for coming here.
Thank you.
Maybe that sounds very odd and weird to ask ourselves that, what is the reason of traveling? But in most cases, traveling happens because we want to change the environment, because we want to perhaps meet new people, new places, and get away from the life and all the hustles and bustles and all the business that we have in our own zone. But now we decide to travel in order to refresh ourselves, in order to get a different perspective of life. Now, this is the very surface meaning of traveling, I guess. When we travel, there are many other things that come into our minds.
When I hear about travel, I hear that it's all talking to all of us, like us as human beings. Why? Because we are all travelers at the moment.
Yeah.
Right now, over here, we are all sitting over here, but we are still travelers.
Travelers.
So according to the hadith of Imam Ali alayhi salam, we are all travelers, and it's just a part of day in which we are just kind of taking rest. And that very small rest that we have just sat on the earth is the time span of our lives. And then the caravan head is going to tell us, okay, this is not the place to sit. Get on the vehicle, get on the camelback, get on the animal, so that we have to travel. So it's basically...
So don't forget that you are a traveler.
You are a traveler. We are all travelers.
And in literature, we usually say you're actually a lonely traveler. So don't even get attached to the people or the things that you meet in the journey.
Definitely, definitely. So... we are traveling in this world, even if we think that we are going to stay for a long period of time, but that's a myth and that's an illusion. And I've asked a lot of people, and the final conclusion is they say that we have just lived for a part of day, and this is what we will hear on the Day of Judgment as well. So after this, after the life on this earth, we have the different stages in the Day of Judgment. I can carry stones, I can carry diamonds with myself, and if I'm really wise enough, definitely I'm going to carry diamonds, and I'm going to leave all the stones. So the diamonds are nothing
but
our good
deeds. Travel with not heavy luggages, with very slight.
If we speak about light luggage, I would say the good deeds are those which are gonna give us wings. When it is stated in the Holy Quran, so any person will not lift the burden. So when it comes to bad deeds and stuff, it's about the burdens. So when I'm traveling, I have to carry the burden on myself. But if I'm having the good deeds, it's as if like I'm having wings with myself, which is going to make us fly. So this is the other meanings too, like migration.
Yeah, I would like to add to the provision that you talked about, like the provision that we should take in travel. I would like to add to the provision of travel that you were speaking to, like good deeds are our provision, and also like so in Surah Baqarah we have فَإِنَّ خَيْرَ زَادِتْ تَقْوَى, which means like the provision of your travel should be taqwa, because we are
the best luggage.
Yeah,
the best thing you can carry with yourself is your
taqwa,
piety.
Is piety, yeah. But that means to like the basic meaning of it is to perform what is commanded and avoid what is forbidden.
By the way, just as the brother was telling us about the spiritual aspect of traveling, I just remembered something, that when we start a travel, do we look for an objective of this travel or no? We just move, and it's the idea of moving. Is it to escape myself or to confront myself?
I think it is to, it's rather, the, when it's talking about the spirituality, I think it's the journey inward. And I think Salat helps us a lot in this. It always reminds us of this, like Imam Ali alayhi salam, when talking about why to, what is the reason behind two sajda, like two times we prostrate in front of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It's like, first time we say, we go, it's like we are made from this. Then we stand up again, it's like we will be raised again, and then we will again be turned into clay. So like all the salat itself is talking about the journey, the wuzu, the philosophy of that. It's so all
it's a metaphorical embodiment of the whole journey.
Yes, Imam Ali talks very beautiful about this. Like it's a bit long, but it's talking about the same journey, like where we came from, where we have to go, how we were made, and how we have to be. So, and in this journey, the same Salat teaches us to be down to earth, to be very down
so
to earth.
So there must be objectives and goals that you set for your journey.
Indeed. Indeed. Without an objective, what is the fun? Like you're wasting your time or wasting the journey, or you're not learning from that journey.
Yeah, but actually, now we go for a break and then we come back to talk about this point that what we actually are doing, many of us, in this travel and journey that we have on earth, we forget about the fact that, okay, this is a journey in which I have to have some objectives set for myself.
Mm-hmm.
We just come and move, and this is just the matter of moving and the matter of having fun, and that's all. Which I think if we look at it like this, then life is going to seem so empty. Okay, let's go for the break, and then we come back to see what's more with traveling.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
The real voyage of discovery consists not in seeking new landscapes, but in having new eyes. So, welcome back. This is Back to Reality, and we're talking about traveling. So far, we got to this point that traveling is not just, in any way that you take it, traveling is not just this physical act of moving from one place into another. It's more. Even when we go into travel on this earth, like the earthly traveling thing that we do, in the meanwhile, and through our way to get into destination, we get too many moments of manifestation in which we start to think, okay, this is a traveling on earth. What about the larger scale travel that I have, which is my life and my journey, the luggages we were talking about? How can I be a traveler on this earth with all these issues and problems that I face and still manage to get some good luggages, luggages of piety, luggages of being modest, down to earth, of being kind to human beings, of not harming anyone? How?
When we speak about travel in this world, we have an origin and we have a destination and everything is set and we know the vehicle, like the means of transportation by air or by train or car or whatever. And we know how much of luggage we have to carry and the required documents which we have to have. Oh, which we have to carry, otherwise...
we even know the duration.
We know the duration, exactly. Everything is set. Everything is known
planned.
Beforehand. Huh?
Planned.
Yeah, everything is planned, exactly. Even about our own life as travelers, we have to see our origin was somewhere else and our destination. So when you start your journey, you go to a place and you come back, right? Isn't it? This is what normally happens. Other than migration, this is another story. Like you are going somewhere, like you're shifting your place to another place, basically. So if you have to go to the place, inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un, example. Mm-hmm. So we go back to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So it's basically speaking about the origin.
So it's not migration. It's going back to the origin.
Exactly. It's going back to the origin. This is the main concept. It's not that, okay, So my origin was from this earth and this worldly life. No, it wasn't the case. It is from somewhere.
But the world is trying too hard to show us that it's like this.
Of course, this world which we live in is so sometimes so khabees and so disgusting that it portrays something which is false to be true.
Exactly.
So it doesn't show the haqqaiq or realities. So we come from another place and we will go back to that place.
There's a verse of Quran that says that when you die, you will see what you have sent ahead of you and what will be sent after you. So what we send ahead of us is the luggage that we have already prepared. And what will be sent after us is the sadaqah jariyah that remains. Like maybe I have nurtured good children.
Exactly.
Maybe I donated something to
you wrote a book,
library.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe I wrote a good book. And maybe we did some good podcasts that are
exactly,
broadcasted.
Yeah. Maybe we did Back to Reality.
Yeah. So, yeah, and that, you know, leads someone to hidayah. So, inshallah. But these are something that's going to come after me even. So in that journey, alhamdulillah, we have this option that we are not only sending the things ahead of us. There's also an option that, you know, that there's remains and unclosed deeds.
Exactly.
So, yeah. But in this beautiful journey, you know, we have that is not in our control because time is not in our control. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala already says that, wal asr innal insana lafi khusr. I swear by the passing time that the humankind is in the grave loss, except for those who have iman plus amal salih, except for those who have faith and carry out the good deeds. So it's very important to both have faith and carry out good deeds and practice patience,
yeah,
because all those things come up with patience. Nothing comes without patience. And all these things, that good deeds we are saying, are our companion, like our beloved Prophet, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon him and his purified family, says, "Ar-Rafiq summal Tariq." First,
wow,
choose,
yeah,
your.
That's very beautiful.
Yeah, first choose your companion and then your
journey.
Yeah. So even,
and it's
this,
really important because we all have seen it in these even earthly travels. If you,
yeah,
do not have a good company, you would suffer.
Right.
Up
it's,
until
it's
you're
not
back.
Just for this world, I guess. It's also for that world, like. Prepare your companion what's going to be with you,
yeah,
in the hereafter, and then,
which is,
you know,
actually technically symbolically that's your deed,
yeah,
which is going
deeds,
to accompany you,
yeah.
Yeah.
And also in this world, like, I don't know, we choose our spouse, we choose friends, we choose anyone whosoever we want to travel with, because being with a spouse all your life is a journey with that person. So choose that person very
wisely, yeah,
so that you don't suffer in that journey. So
exactly.
Companion choosing is very important.
So
in
even
the
in the journey, mm-hmm, the companion has to be picked out on this objective that they would make a better version of me.
Yep.
Even in this journey, they're,
yes,
going to change me into a better version.
Definitely, definitely. And even the path which has been laid is the path of mustaqim, that is sirat al-mustaqim,
yeah,
which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, this is my path, and the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salatu wasalam are in reality the sirat al-mustaqim. So I would say the road or the path which you choose for your journey in order to go from your origin and back to the origin is very important. So if you are on Sirat al-Mustaqim, if you're on that right path, the correct path, you will get a lot of opportunities, a lot of golden opportunities. So it's as if you are traveling and you see a lot of, I would say, bunches of roses. You will see jewels on the path. You will, like, glitters, everything, like, just at your disposal, just for you, at your service. So, example, you have salat, yeah. If you're doing it on time, example, and you're not doing it qadha, you are on that path.
Yeah.
If you're obeying your parents, if you're making them smile, if you're making your spouse smile.
When,
yeah,
we look back, we see that there are too many changes that happen to us.
Yeah.
So I hope that all these changes that we see in ourselves are in the better version, like the ones that make us better than the previous version
of
us.
It's never too late to learn.
It's never too late, and the doors of repentance are always open, and God loves those who come back to their origin. So this was all for today. I hope you have enjoyed that. Until another episode, I leave you to God's never-sleeping eyes. Wassalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin. رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي لدي أمار عزك
يا الله
يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي لدي أمار عزك لتصي دليلتك once to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free. I wish that somehow you tell me out aloud. Sometimes it just gets too much. I feel that I've lost touch. I know the road is long. Make me strong. I know I'm waiting, yearning for something, something known. Sometimes it just gets too much. I feel that I've lost touch. I know the road is long. Make me strong. Sometimes it just gets too much. I feel that I've lost.
chair defends of Iranian combatants.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.